author of Remaking the Space Between Us. So here we are. Let's talk more about this implicit bias that is within all of us.
Yes, and it is within all of us. I mean, one thing I think we underestimate, and it's one reason why I don't like cancel culture or political correctness, because it's so punitive. We're all products of our past. We're all products of our socialization. We're not even aware of it. The things that we learn as we grow up, they're very, very subtle. And there's a woman by the name of Mahzarin Banaji who started to study implicit bias. And if you're interested in discovering your own implicit bias, all you have to do is type implicit bias into Google and take their implicit bias test. They came up with this test 15 years ago, and they tested implicit bias around race, skin tone, weight, gender. I think there were six of them. Sexual orientation. And what was fascinating is that one of her doctoral students decided to see if there had been change since they started doing these tests. So about 2 years ago, she started looking at whether implicit biases had changed over 7 years. And interestingly enough, age bias had not changed. People who are overweight, bias against them had not changed. The one that changed the most was around being gay. And then the second was racial bias, but it had not changed quite, you know, it was like maybe, I think 30%, maybe 25%, whereas gay bias had changed like 60 or 70. It was quite remarkable. And Mahzarin Banaji posited that when it came time to figure out whether you were going to reject your gay grandson or son, or you were going to change your views about homosexuality, as Mahzarin Banaji, they chose love, okay? But the problem with race is we live such segregated lives, you don't have that same reality where you're going to choose love, because you don't even have a relationship oftentimes with someone who's of a different racial. But this is the really unbelievable piece of data. They discovered that 97% of people had changed their espoused or explicit view of race. They're conscious. 97% had changed their conscious views on race. Okay. But they still, only 30% had changed their implicit bias. So white people are walking around thinking, I'm not biased. And people of color are going, oh, I don't know how to break this to you, but you're still doing the same things you were doing before.
Right.
Isn't that amazing?
Exactly. Oh, that's an amazing. And I just want to point out to our listeners, you can feel the superb researcher that you are, Diana. I mean, in this book, you have done so much research and reported on all of it. I mean, it's just amazing. So it's not your opinion that you're giving in this book at all. It's you've really amassed and curated an enormous amount of research for us. I just want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And I want to say the reason I did it is I wanted to model what I hope to see more of.
Well, you certainly have modeled it. Absolutely.
That's great. Well, thank you.
And so I want to talk about now some of us. Okay. Where do we go from here? All right.
Sure.
How can we go from here? How biased are we? Can it be bridged? What can we do?
Well, first of all, I think we shouldn't get down on ourselves for being biased. It's part of human nature. I think the big thing is to try to identify what our biases are. And the trouble we have is that we don't see them. So what I want people to think about is building learning relationships with one another, learning relationships within groups and learning relationships across groups, where you don't call people out, you call them in. You say, gee, you know, I noticed you did such and such. Was there something I did to contribute to that? And if not, what was that about? And is there a way I can help you? Right. I often say to people, I have this tendency. If you see me do it, would you please let me know? Because I'll be the last to see it. I think we need to build learning relationships where we can help one another see things that we ourselves can't see, whether it's a bias or a behavior that's getting in the way of learning. I think that's a core thing. And we need to do it within groups, and we need to do it across groups. And there are a lot of examples in the book of how to do that.
Also, you give many examples, just incredible examples of where communities have come together.
Yes, yeah.
And I just, Diana,
stunning.
When
yeah.
It's just stunning. I mean, one that was stunning to me was a certain woman that went to Billings,
yes.
Montana.
Yeah.
And she did some filming of something that was taking place there. So talk about how that one person kind of
made a
helped
difference.
A difference, helped to project this thing that was happening in this small community.
Yeah. And the difference she made, by the way, ended up creating an organization called Not in Our Town. So we don't need to be Patrice O'Neill. But she happily has created a context for us to join. But Patrice O'Neill is the woman you're speaking to of, and she made a number of documentaries. Two I refer to in the book. The first one is called Not in Our Town. You can find it on PBS. What happened is in Billings, Montana, back in the mid 1990s, probably 1993, three hate crimes occurred. One was a Native American home was vandalized. They wrote the word die in a swastika on the wall of the house. And then an African American church was intimidated by skinheads who went and tried to terrorize the congregants. And then a young Jewish boy had put a menorah in his window at Hanukkah, and somebody threw a brick through the window. So what happened is the following. The painters union said, hey, we're going to go paint your house for free because we want to send a message that that's not acceptable in our town.
To the Native American.
Exactly. They went to the Native American home and they painted their house for free because they wanted to do something. They were so upset it happened and they wanted to send a signal, not in our town. And then the white neighbors of the African American church accompanied the African American congregants to church, so that they couldn't be intimidated by the skinheads. And then the newspaper, the local newspaper, published a picture of a menorah, and hundreds of homes throughout Billings put that menorah in their window. Patrice O'Neill went there and interviewed people on why they did it. And the painter, one of the painters said, well, that's what we do. Someone's in trouble, we help them. Don't they do that anywhere else? And so Patrice, after she did the film, she went back to California, where she's from, and she decided to show the film to communities in California. And people in the audience, by the way, were from law enforcement, from faith organizations, from community organizations, educators. And at the end of the film, she said, okay, so what do you guys think of Billings? And they went, we don't want to talk about Billings. We want to talk about our town. We want to talk about, are we creating a community of belonging such that violence is no longer tolerated? And so people belong and don't feel the need to be violent. Okay. And so that then led her to go to 150 town halls across the country. And now there are thousands of Not in Our Town chapters across the country. And if you go to Not in Our Town website, you can find, she has a lot of films and resources. It's amazing. Yeah,
it is amazing. And I want you to tell another story because it leads into your idea of what helps real change is friendship.
Yes.
Friendship is like the big deal. It's the big deal. It's no small thing. And if we talk about it, it crosses boundaries. And
yes.
It leads to what some would say unparalleled advantages in culture is
yes.
friendship. And there's one that just pops out to me,
yes.
and that's Derek Black.
Yeah, amazing story.
He was born into KKK royalty.
Yes.
Share that story of Derek.
Well, first, I want to call out Eli Saslow, who has to be one of my favorite and also one of the best journalists who's written extraordinary books. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. And he wrote a book called Rising Out of Hatred, in which he tells the story of Derek Black. And I drew on that in this essay. I tried to reduce it so that more and more people could get exposed to his wonderful story, but I highly recommend that book. So Derek Black was the godson of David Duke, who was a grand wizard in the Ku Klux Klan. He was the son of Don Black, who started the first hate site called Stormfront on the internet. And he shared a radio show with his dad called the Don and Derek Black Radio Show. He grew up just across the way from Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago in West Palm Beach. He was homeschooled. He was immersed in white nationalist ideology. And when I talk about the small or the closed mental space within groups, I appropriated that from Derek Black, who said that was the nature of the group. It wasn't like they were trying to go out and hurt people. They were looking out for their own, and they were just talking again with each other and so on. So Derek is a smart kid, and he gets into a college in Florida called New College. And that's a whole other story as to what's happened to it. But at the time, it was a very left-wing liberal student body. And he did not tell people what he did. But when he went, he made a number of friends very early on. One was with an immigrant from Latin America, Juan. Another was Matthew Stevenson, who was an Orthodox Jew, and his close friend, Mosh Ash. And they became quite close. And after a year, all of a sudden, it was exposed that he was a white nationalist. And the left-wing student body got on what's a kind of social media, it's like a message board. And they were like, we got to get rid of this guy. He's disgusting. I just wish his family would die. I mean, it was vitriolic and hateful. Matthew Stevenson and Mosh Ash said, nope, we do not want to push him away. We know what it's like to be pushed away. We know what it's like to be rejected. And it just made us more entrenched. So we're going to invite him to Shabbat on Friday night. And every Friday, Matthew Stevenson invited people to Shabbat. And so he invited Derek, and a lot of people dropped out because they didn't want to be there.
So I'm going to just kind of interrupt you, and I'm going to say to interrupt you for just a moment, Diana, because this story is so magnificent about friendship and about acceptance and all other aspects of human nature that are is the best of us. And I want you to tell this full story. So I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Diana McLean Smith. She's the author of Remaking the Space Between Us. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Diana McLean Smith, and we're talking about a story of Derek Black, who was part of a certain
The white nationalist
white
movement.
nationalist group, and he was being rejected at school, but somebody stood up for him. So where are we in that story now?
And it's not so much, it wasn't so much that they stood up for him, although they did. They invited him in to join them for Shabbat dinner. And before he arrived, Matthew Stevenson said to the people who, some people dropped out, but those remaining said, pardon my language, just don't be assholes. We want him to come back. So we're not going to talk about his beliefs. We're just going to talk about things that we are interested in common. So they met for about a year. And during that time, Matthew's roommate, Allison Gornick, was absolutely appalled that they were inviting this guy into their house. So she refused to go. But as circumstance would have it, Derek and Allison showed up on a boat together that a friend had one afternoon, and they got to know each other a little bit. And she got really curious because she goes, how could such a gentle, kind, curious, smart guy be a white nationalist? She said, I got to figure this out. So she started talking with him. Now, I want to say it wasn't just that they accepted him. It's very important that people understand this. It's that they were friends regardless, but they also confronted, she decided she was going to confront him on his beliefs, but not in a way that was argumentative and nasty. She said, look, I need to understand how you could believe these things.
So she came to him with curiosity.
With curiosity and concern, like, you
Yes.
know, I'm concerned about this. I'm genuinely concerned and I'm curious. So what if we started doing some research together on our different beliefs and got some data and started talking about how we make sense of it and why do we make sense of it that way? And she engaged in this over months. Eventually, Derek disavowed his white nationalist beliefs. And if you go back to the New York Times the day after Trump got elected, he wrote an op-ed piece that said, 4 years ago, I would have been delighted, but now I'm not. This is a big sign that we are in trouble because it's bringing out the worst, most nativistic, racist aspects of our character. And it was a complete transformation. When he reflected on what allowed for the transformation, he said it was the fact that people pointed out what I was doing and its impact on them and how it was affecting things I cared about, which was fairness and justice and so on. And they also stood by me while they did that. So it wasn't an either or. People think they have to either accept people or they have to confront them.
Right, exactly.
They there's a bifurcation in our culture which is terribly destructive, and that is we either empathize or we hold people accountable. And Allison Gornick empathized with what he was up against, and she held him accountable for his actions and his impact. And she combined the two, and that is a very important skill.
And I know that he in what he wrote, he said, I'm done. I don't believe in this, and I'm
Anymore.
not going to be involved anymore, which was extraordinary. And he came to that on his own accord, just by doing the research with someone who was open to questioning,
And who cared about, I really cared about him.
really
Their
cared. Yeah.
friendship deepened and they eventually got married.
Isn't that wild? It's so wild. So we're talking about how there are action steps that we can take as citizens to bridge this gap, this polarization. And again, I want to emphasize that this is new territory. We're talking about a new kind of democracy, aren't we?
Yes, we
Yeah.
are. We are. That's actually very important. And the example of a white nationalist is about as extreme as you can get. And I use it because I want people to know if that can happen, then think of what we can do in less extreme situations. But we are talking about another kind of democracy. When our democracy was founded, it was founded as an adversarial democracy. We have a two-party system. You go to court, you get someone defending, somebody prosecuting. It's an adversarial win-lose system, okay? And that leads us to imagine one another as citizens, as adversaries. And I think we need to reimagine our democracy and with citizens as friends who share some of the same interests and who have different interests and have conflicting interests. But when you are friends, think about this. When you're friends with someone, you have to take into account their interests as well as your own, or you're not going to become friends for long. Okay? So it's a different conception of how do you navigate competing interests. You have to take into account the interests of your friend. That doesn't mean you cater to them. That doesn't mean you cave to them. It means you take it into account and you work with your friend to figure out a way to meet both your interests.
And this is like, it's not a compromise. It's like an opening and a
A
welcoming. It's
creative.
all right, creative. And we're talking about complexities.
Yes, we
You
are.
know, hey, this is not simple, is
No.
what the reality is, that it's not simple. And we're going in this culture for simple answers. Oh, give me a quick answer now, now,
Yeah.
now. I want to get it done. And but
Yeah.
it, so this is taking time. We're going to have to be with one another in a different way.
Yes, yeah.
Is that what you're advocating?
Yes, and I will also say that there's nothing more inclined to create greater complexity than necessary than looking for a simple, quick fix, because they always backfire and create more complexity. There's a wonderful book called Getting to Yes, happens to be written by three authors, one of whom is my husband, but it is probably the best-selling, one of the best-selling books of all
Say
time. It's
his name. Hey, give it.
okay, yeah, Bruce Patton,
Okay.
Patton, but the book is Getting to Yes, which
Okay.
is a very well-known book, but it talks about principled negotiation, which essentially lays out the idea that we always have tensions in our interests, and we have to figure out creative ways of meeting those interests. It's not compromise. They tell the story of two girls arguing over an orange, and they decide in the end to cut the orange in half. But they discover afterwards that one wanted the rind for cooking and the other wanted the pulp for eating. And had they understood their interests, they could have bet both their interests. That is actually a metaphor for what happens a lot among us
Right,
people.
right.
And we're always talking about compromise. We're not talking about creating. We're also talking about finding common ground, not creating common ground. Finding a solution as opposed to creating a solution. We have a lack of imagination that we've got to start to address, and we have to become more creative in our thinking about how to move forward.
So, in other words, and I know in my experience that nothing gets accomplished before it's imagined.
Yes,
So
yeah.
we need to imagine a some somehow a together a
Yes.
long-term vision
Yes, yeah.
that is going to be inclusive and that will help to make the world work and culture work better for all, not just some.
Yeah. And the reason why that's so important, what you're saying, is I think people have reduced all of this to a value conflict, which there are values out there that conflict. The way I think about it is we are now a multi-group nation. Since the 1970s, there are no groups that can get airbrushed out of the American dream. We have, even if we stopped immigration tomorrow, we have a multi-group nation, and not just around race, but around gender, around class, around education. We have a multi-group reality. So that means we've got to learn how to deal across groups. And if you systematically leave out one or two groups, it ends up coming back to roost for all the groups because it puts a monkey wrench in the works. It slows us down. We can't solve our problems. People get violent. People get angry. People get polarized. We have to find a way to live as a multi-group reality. And the only way I know to do that is to take into account the different interests of the groups and to start trying to figure out accommodations, creative solutions that will satisfy enough of the interests of each group to allow us to move forward together.
Exactly. So well said. Now, just want to go out with a few examples of those of us who live in our own tribe, our own silos. I mean, I do. I
Yeah,
do.
we all do.
I have to say, I do not know anybody with whom I can have an in-depth conversation about their beliefs that are different from mine. And then in your book, you give so many resources. So recently, I've joined a group that's going to help me with this. And I'd love to kind of go out to with maybe a suggestion of a group. And that was Braver Angels
Yes.
is one of the groups that you recommended in your book.
Yes, Braver Angels is one. Another one is One Step, and Constructive Dialogue
And
Institute,
another one is Resetting the Table.
Resetting the Table, Not in Our Town, and Starts With Us. I would highly recommend people go to the website Starts With Us, because it has the polarization challenge, and they'll send you an exercise every day for re-examining your own beliefs, which is great. But Braver Angels, I wanted to mention, that's a good one to mention, because they started out with a debate program where Allison Lawson, it might be Alice Lawson, pardon me, Ms. Lawson, if I've mangled your name. She is what was the consummate debate chair, and she did a terrific job of bringing people from different views together. And it's worth video looking at them on YouTube.
Okay, good. So look them up. Look at Starts With Us. And oh, Diana, thank you so much for being with us today. I'm
What fun.
Diana McLean Smith is the author of Remaking the Space Between Us. Her website, remakingthespace.org, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3822.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the Donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support, and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Michelle Seeger, author of The Joy Choice. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how to finally achieve lasting changes in eating and exercise. I hope you'll join us.
Tune in to Intravenous on Wednesdays from 10 to 11 a.m. for music and talk radio about all things, all genders. Discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through an intersectional feminist lens, our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony. Intravenous, every Wednesday morning from 10 to 11, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours.
You're listening